There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here with Siraj. Robbie is out of town this week, but we'll be back next week for another roundup of all things the 45th administration. Hi, Siraj. How are you doing?
I'm good, Susan. Yourself?
Not too bad. We are back after our two-week Mega Russia episode series, and a lot has changed.
How'd that go?
Well, you know, it gets out of date about as fast as you put it together, but...
That's true. So, since you guys last went live, what did we miss?
Everything.
Everything?
So I guess the biggie, the big thing of all is the Flynn indictment. Flynn has pled guilty. He is not getting locked up, but he is a convicted, or he's pled, well, had not been sentenced yet, so it's not finalized.
There's still potential, I'm sure, for him to get locked up if he doesn't cooperate.
He'll cooperate with his son on the line.
Also, if he gets pardoned by Trump, which I doubt he will, there's obviously, and I'm sure we'll get into it, potential for more charges down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a pardon happening just because how is that going to help here?
If he gets pardoned,
well, also, he then loses his Fifth Amendment right to testify. So what's the point?
With
his son, I mean, his son has state charges as well that potentially against him and Flynn Sr., General Flynn.
Yeah. So, well, we'll get into it in a little bit. Let's talk about the big Alabama Senate race.
Oh, yeah. So this is going to air on Tuesday. Today is the election in Alabama for Jeff Sessions' seat.
Happy Election Day, everyone.
Yes, Alabama, go to the polls.
Yeah, or don't. I mean, whatever you guys want to do, like, who cares? I mean, does it really matter at this point? Roy Moore is probably going to win. Despite our better judgment, Roy Moore, at least in a Sunday poll that I recently saw, I think it was CBS, it was 4 points ahead over Doug Jones. And Doug Jones just isn't doing himself any favors. I mean, he's running to the left of everyone in Alabama. And running on things.
I mean, he's a Democrat. He's not running.
No,
he's a very moderate Democrat. He'd be another manager.
He's trying to go full Bernie Sanders, talking about the Second Amendment and gun control, talking about abortion. I mean, I know those are like, for Democrats, those are issues that probably would drive people out to the polls. But he's not getting any help from the Democratic Socialists because apparently he's not in favor of. Of a $15 minimum wage, he's not in favor of like single payer. So I wouldn't say he's going full. He's not full Bernie Sanders. I'd say he's Bernie Sanders light. He's at least more to the left of every single person in Alabama, it seems. And that's not really doing
him any favors. I don't think that's quite the case. I mean, like, again, the cities, you always got some actual liberal enclaves.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's running as a Democrat because he is one.
No, so. I know. And I know that Alabama is a deeply conservative state and they want conservative justices and conservative judges. And they want, you know, a conservative vote in the Senate. So I understand why Alabamas are thinking the way they are thinking. But it really is not a good sign for Alabama and I guess the country as a whole to have a guy like Roy Moore in the U.S. Senate. Representing 5.5 million people.
I mean, the GOP has laid down its money. Like, it now believes that it's okay with
very,
a child molester.
Very, very
in
disappointing.
Office.
I've written about this extensively in the Examiner just in the past week about how the red line for Democrats with Al Franken and his alleged sexual misconduct is seven accusers, seven women coming forward saying that Al Franken has done something. Sexually inappropriate. But where's the red line for the GOP? And that's a very good question because I don't think there is a red line.
We have a red line.
Where's the
and
red
line? And that's pulling some, like,
where's
creepy,
the red line? Where's the red line for the GOP?
Creepy Handmaid's Tale reenactments is apparently where the line is.
Oh, in terms of Representative, or I should say former Representative Trent
yes.
Franks from Arizona.
That's
some wild stuff. But again, you know, for a member of Congress who was engaging in that activity while he was serving in office is a heck of a lot different than Al Franken, who most of his accusers are coming out now about his alleged misconduct before he was elected. I think there are a couple, I think, while he was in office that he acted that way. In that case, there's probably, you know, no argument to be made. They both should be gone. But again, in the case of Roy Moore, who, if you took away all the sexual misconduct allegations against him, where so far there have been 9 women who've come forward against him, he's still the most anti-liberty, anti-religious freedom, least qualified person to represent a state in the Senate.
Yeah, he's disqualified in every single conceivable measure. I mean, he got kicked off the Supreme Court twice for refusing to follow the rule of law. And he is now defined for MAGA, Make America Great Again, when America was great for him, was slavery.
Yeah, and I looked at the full context of that quote, too, because I think Jake Tapper from CNN did a good job of actually posting the full clip. And you can kind of understand why he said what he said, but still there's no excuse for it sounds like he's condoning slavery. And
he's somehow got it in his head that you can somehow separate what life like slavery from the what life was like then in America, and you can't.
Yeah, and also I mean like but he the what he said in that quote was that our in addition to saying that, you know, our families were together even though we had slavery, our country had a direction. And that just like...
But our families weren't together because black families were split apart in like a genocidal reign of terror.
I know. So he gets his facts wrong and he just sounds like a complete douchebag. So, and racist, obviously. Yeah. So it just, you know, Alabama, they want to be taken seriously. They think... I've seen this Frank Luntz, you know, this video that went up on, I think it was Vice this past week. Of him interviewing like a crowd. And Frank Luntz is a pollster. So he interviews like a crowd of people, like 20 people at a time. And they all want to be taken seriously, but they just like do a complete disservice to themselves and all the smart people who actually live in Alabama and just make everyone look like an idiot and a racist and a sexist. Because it, you know, you should believe all the accusers who come forward against Bill Clinton or Al Franken, but all the women coming forward against Roy Moore or Donald Trump are liars.
I watched that as well, and I thought it was interesting that that was sort of the tack they took. But also, they seem to have almost a unanimous acknowledgement. One lady thought it was all a George Soros plot, but aside from her, the rest of them actually seemed kind of acknowledged that yeah, some of them were true. But then again, back in the day, having a DA hitting your 14-year-old was a mark of pride.
Oh yeah, so yeah, that was wild.
Like there was an acknowledgement at a gut level. Like they might all say it's all made up and all fake, but I think they do. By the majority, like large majority, recognize there's something happened here that he did pursue young girls.
Yeah, and you know, like I was at the mall over the weekend, and I live in Northern Virginia, so I was at Tyson's. It's a big mall, big and a lot of people, and I'm just looking around me, and I see, you know, it's a very popular spot for teenagers to go. I was like, wow, like,
are you sure you want to keep going here, Siraj?
I'm 30, and these are just children, and that's the type of. Like target that Roy Moore had his sights set on. Like it boggles my mind thinking that someone would want to, you know, ask him out on a date. Like
he's a predator.
I know. And so that's why I'm just like the cut. Like it just boggles my mind that this is an issue. That not only is this a issue, but or that we're talking about it, but the fact that some people are just like, yeah, that's perfectly okay.
So how does that – do you call yourself a Republican?
No, not even close.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand
I've never registered as a Republican. In fact, the only party I've registered was in 2008 as a Democrat when I could first vote. And I just haven't re-upped my registration with the Democrats since I moved to Virginia. So I'm pretty much not affiliated with any party. Yeah, I mean, my political leanings have always been centrist libertarian, although I probably lean a little bit to the right, but not by much.
Yeah, there's obviously the difference between ideology and party.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how Republicans who, you know, believe in the ideology, but aren't on board with the, you know, supporting child molester and Nazis part,
right,
man should justify for themselves still staying in the party. Like, yeah, the party. And,
I mean, I predict, you know, it's kind of, it seems par for the course for Trump to endorse Roy Moore, because he's an opportunist who, you know, is just looking for the next thing that makes him look good, even when it makes him look bad. But, you know, people, you know, libertarians in the House and Senate, like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul, they've all endorsed Roy Moore before all these allegations came out. And I'm like, why? Why are you doing this? This is an awful, awful idea. And, you know.
Once you support Trump, it's easy to support a child molester. I mean, like, you have no floor at that point. You've given away your dignity. What's the point in, like, trying to claim it back?
Yeah, well, you know, there is something to be said about a lot of these allegations, and I'm sure there are going to be some people who allege false allegations against another person. And, you know, you're just going to get that in any, like, wave of, you know, accusers coming forward. Not everyone's going to be telling the full truth. Hey, Susan, so what are you going to be doing for the holidays? Got any gift ideas?
Not yet. Working on it.
Really? Because actually what you should do is you should go on to harryanddavid.com because I actually love treating my friends, family, and business partners to the amazing gourmet goodies that only come from Harry and David. My personal favorite are pears, and Harry and David, their pears are just perfect. And so if you actually go to Harry and David right now, they're offering you 20% off of all of your holiday purchases. That's 20% off all the Christmas gifts and goodies that the lucky people on your list can handle.
Yeah, I gotta say, so we got one of these, a package from Harry and David a couple weeks ago, and it was amazing, and it's now all gone, which is kind of sad.
Well, Susan, if you're lucky enough, you're going to be on my list and you're going to get another one. Well, and I hope all of our listeners can actually go on Harry and David right now, because if you go before this Friday onto harryanddavid.com, you can save on your holiday order 20%. And so you can get, you know, if you're a chocolate lover, late night snacker, wine aficionado, or just a holiday hostess, Harry and David's got everything you love. So in order to get 20% off select holiday favorites, go now. Just go to harryanddavid.com, click the radio icon, and enter code 45. That's harryanddavid.com. Click the radio icon and enter 45 for 20% off. Hurry, the offer ends Friday.
So we'll go back to Al Franken for a moment here. And here's part of why I'm glad he resigned. He needed to. But I'm very glad he did not resign immediately when the allegations first came out. And I thought it was extremely premature and, like, not just a bad idea for him to, for like a new standard we set, as in someone accuses you, you step down. Now, if you're the person involved and it's true, then yes, you should step the hell down. But for everyone else around who doesn't know for sure one way or another, there is value in waiting. And first of all, if they're a serial predator, like most of these guys seem to be, yeah, there's going to be more ladies coming forward.
Yeah.
There's no harm in waiting.
The thing about Franken is that, you know, I mean, there was obviously photo evidence of that. That was one accuser, obviously. The other ones, we don't have as much evidence other than, you know, personal accounts of what actually he did. And
I will say, though, so, like, false accusations, the thing is, until, like, a very, like, second half of this year, mm-hmm. it's not like you'd be believed. So what's the value in making false accusations? Because they basically don't matter. That seems to be changing, which I think means we have to keep that in mind, that going forward, there are people like Veritas who are going to try to take advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
But we also need to figure out what now that we have suddenly, for some unexplained reason, as a society, agreed to accept that sexual harassment is a bad thing and we shouldn't do it.
Right.
How do we treat offenses going forward? Because I don't think there should be like a universal, any kind of sexual misconduct at any point in your life means you can't ever hold any kind of office role.
Yeah, no, that's true. But again, like, if you engage in that misconduct while you're in office, then obviously that disqualifies you. But what had happened, in this case, a lot of people are saying, Roy Moore should stay in the race because let the people of Alabama decide. You know, the people of Alabama are probably going to decide that they want Roy Moore to represent them. And if you're listening to this on Wednesday or after the election results, that is absolutely the case.
Hopefully you're totally wrong, Suraj. People are listening and go like, wow, Suraj really called this race wrong.
Believe me, I hope I'm wrong. But
no, I think you're right, too, unfortunately.
I mean, I know that one of the things that Jackie Speier, Congresswoman, I believe a California Congresswoman, who's been leading the charge with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand on the sexual harassment reckoning that they're having on Capitol Hill, trying to expedite these ethics probes, which is a good thing. I mean, they should. I mean, with John Conyers and Al Franken, Trent Franks, and now, Blake Farenthold, I mean, there are a lot of very sleazy individuals representing the good people in the U.S. And I just want to, I know we have talked about, I don't think we've talked about Ivanka enough about this because, she stands clear opposite from her father on Roy Moore and saying that there's a special place in hell for people who abuse children. And so I'm sure she is not thrilled at all with her father endorsing Roy Moore.
I mean, her father, I mean, she's always been positioned because her father has repeatedly made extremely creepy comments over the years about her, like super creepy. Is it wrong to be more attracted to your daughter than your wife thing?
No, I mean, and those are definitely questionable comments, but
so again, this is not new territory for her.
But that's not it.
I'm just saying she's probably used to this.
But it's not Ivanka's fault for,
nothing is her fault. I'm just saying this is definitely something she definitely has gone through before and will continue to go through
and I'm not saying that the president has engaged in this behavior, but there have, of course there are individuals who abuse their own family members in the most sickening and horrific ways. So I'm not saying that.
I mean, his wife testified under oath that he raped her.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I mean, we have a sexual harasser in office. We have someone who bragged about walking in on teenage girls as they're changing.
Yeah.
Because he had a right to, because it was his pageant. We have, I mean, he's a terrible human being, and we've chosen him to be president.
Yeah.
So.
I guess, yeah, well, let's just talk about that.
I guess one bright spot here, though. Senator Shelby, he's the other senator of Alabama, today, out of the blue, came out and said, I couldn't vote for Roy Moore, and no one else should either. I saw some people talking about,
I missed that, actually.
Yeah. People were like, what's the play here? What's the political strategy? And like, I mean, I think it's pretty clear there is no political strategy. The dude's like, what, 80 something? And he's not running for re-election for,
oh, wow.
I don't know, I think sometime 2020s. So, I think he's just speaking what he feels.
I mean,
yeah. This is his line in the sand is way gone and he's not going to support Roy Moore.
Yeah. Well, and then you have people like Senator Jeff Merkley from Oregon and Cory Booker from New Jersey calling on Trump now to resign over his sexual misconduct, which, you kind of had to guess that this was going to happen given the fact that they've purged their party of Al Franken and John Conyers, or purged at least the House and Senate of them. That was the play right there that they had to go to. If they didn't call on that without having Conyers or Franken resign, there probably wouldn't be any moral high ground for them to stand on.
I mean, he's not going to go anywhere anyway. But,
no, I know he's not going to, but the fact that they're calling for, I mean, Booker's also trying to run in 2020. I mean, there's no denying that he's definitely going to run.
Yeah, well, if he can, depends what the positioning is.
Oh, no, he's definitely running.
Really? You think matter for sure. High water?
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's definitely running. No doubt about it. He's been campaigning for Doug Jones in Alabama. He's talking about Iowa schools.
When was that?
This weekend.
Oh, I missed that part. Yeah. I knew he was down there. I didn't know.
Yeah, no, like everybody, all the reporters in the room, their ears perked up as soon as he mentioned the word Iowa. They're like, what? This guy's running. So anyways, but let's talk about some other stuff and people who are, or buildings, I should say, that are running away from one city to another.
Or not, or because not. It's never going to happen.
We'll see what happens. But President Trump declared this past Wednesday that he will be moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and formally acknowledging Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And that has sent shockwaves throughout the world. And people are pretty mad about it. First of all, Susan, what's your take on it?
I mean, it's a what you'd expect from Trump, a needless boneheaded move, like designed for pure, like he's trying to get the optics here, trying to be all positioning himself. Look how strong I am and how mighty I am. And look how I'm, you know, doing this thing that all my conservative base likes.
No, I actually thought I read a piece in The Independent about this, that Trump was really doing it for the evangelical part of his base, because
he believes
Israel and in this case Jerusalem will bring about the end of days, because the third temple will be built and Jesus will return, and it'll force all the Jews to, you know, have a choice of either converting to Christianity or die at the hands of the wrath of God. So like it's, you know, very like biblical, ominous type stuff.
Yeah, they want to get raptured sooner rather than later.
I mean, I'm looking forward to the end of days too, but not that soon.
So, but I mean, that's why like the base wants it. But for Trump himself, I think he sees it as like, it makes him look strong and good without really doing it, like, you know, not actually accomplishing. He doesn't care about what happens in the real world, what happens like physically in the world, what happens in actual negotiations. He just wants to look good on TV.
I read a report saying that, I think it was circulating about after the announcement, that he was not as, didn't really grasp the ramifications of his move, or at least that's where White House aides were telling the news outlets anonymously.
Were saying they thought that, like, you know, they could just resume negotiations, you know, a couple of weeks after this all dies down.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that there are several arguments, obviously, that can be made against this move, but some of them don't really flesh out as well. So, like for the example that this completely breaks down the peace process, I don't recall any real peace process going forward, at least under this administration, or even in the past, what, two administrations, Bush and Obama. I mean, there has been, you know, consistent fighting between Palestinians and Israelis, but ever since Hamas took control over the Palestinian parliament in 2006, I don't think we've ever seen any formal or substantive peace negotiations happening between the two sides, because Hamas doesn't want peace. I'm not saying
you're wrong. We haven't gotten progress lately, so let's just blow it up forever.
Well, yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if you take, I don't think this hurts the peace process more than it's already, you know, than the peace process is dead, is what I'm trying to say.
You can't kill
someone who's already dead. It just won't come back to life.
I mean, but this is an ongoing conflict that has to be resolved at some point, in some way, someday. And this has definitely foreclosed options, probably done.
America
was always at like the totally biased rat pretending not to be. But we've lost any ability to even pose ourselves as someone who can help arbiter this in a neutral fashion. So that's done. Like, well, Trump in general, his role has been to remove America from any position of influence on the world stage. And that's
The sense that this is like, this, you know, Trump not trying to not be an interventionalist. He's intervening is what I'm trying to argue, but without the use of military, I guess that's a good thing. But like, again, you know,
that's true. It could be worse. He could be bombing someone right now.
No matter what Trump does, on this issue, it's not going to sit well with either side, no matter where he goes. I mean, if he didn't move the embassy, Israelis, they may. It's hard to say, because for a lot of his base, and, you know, this happens with the DACA issue, like his base were disappointed, but they didn't completely abandon him. Like one of my close friends who's a Trump supporter, he burned his MAGA hat after the DACA decision. And I think he's come around back to Trump and being supportive of him. So like that, I think no matter what Trump does with his base, so long as like the wall gets built and all the illegals get deported and the Muslims get banned, and it doesn't have to be full on all the way, like he's still going to have their support. And if he doesn't get those things done, they can easily blame the swamp, the Washington establishment, all the obstructionists, and saying, look, Trump is trying to do the best he can, but all these Democrats and all these, you know, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, they're not trying to get anything done.
his base's ultimate policy goal that overrides all others is making sure they can believe that liberals are unhappy.
Yeah.
And as long as they got that, they're still on the train.
Like Trump, I mean, literally Trump could go into Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and not lose any supporters, like he said. He could say he could say the N-word in every single word of a 3,200-word speech, and he would not get voted out. He would not get impeached. Like that's the loyalty that I think Trump has from his supporters, and in probably many Republicans who sit in the halls of Congress. Anyways, do you have any more thoughts on Jerusalem?
No, it's not going to make things better. We'll see how much worse it does make things.
I just hope, honestly, that the violence that's currently happening in the region subsides and people can finally get along. I mean, both sides, they have dirt on their hands and no one's a good guy. And it just, only civilians suffer in this case. And that's what's so infuriating about this.
Yeah, well, now that we have stepped off the world stage, maybe someone else give it a try and do better than we've done so far.
Yeah. Anyways, well, let's move on, because recently, this past week, there was a video that surfaced on the interwebs through a FOIA request. Over the summer at the Department of Justice, Jeff Sessions got really into it with some interns that worked at the DOJ. All of it is gold. There are two clips.
You support pretty harsh policies for marijuana and pretty lax gun control laws. I'm not even sure where you stand on the assault weapons ban. So I'd like to know, since guns kill more people than marijuana, why lax laws on one and harsh laws on the other?
Well, that's apples and oranges question, I would say, first and foremost. But the Second Amendment, you're aware of that. Guarantees the right to the American people to keep and bear arms, and I intend to defend that Second Amendment. It's as valid as the First Amendment. And so that's my basic philosophical view about it. Look, there's this view that marijuana is harmless and it does no damage. I believe last year was the first year that automobile accidents that occurred were found to have been caused more by drugs than by alcohol. Marijuana is not a healthy substance, in my opinion. The American Medical Association is crystal clear on that. Do you believe that?
I don't.
Okay. So, Dr. Whatever your name is, so you can write the AMA and see why they think otherwise.
I'm a student at Berkeley Law. As I'm standing here, I'm thinking about Philando Castile or Michael Brown or any of these other folks who have fallen victim to excessive force. I grew up in a project to a single mother. And the people who we are afraid of are not necessarily our neighbors, but the police.
Well, that may be the view in Berkeley. But it's not the view
in most
places.
That's the view
in
Columbus, Ohio, where the police just recently stomped on a gentleman's head.
I hear you.
At Berkeley Law. As I'm standing here, I'm thinking about Philando Castile or Michael Brown or any of these other folks who have fallen victim to excessive force. I grew up in a project to a single mother. And the people who we are afraid of are not necessarily our neighbors, but the police.
Well, that may be the view in Berkeley, but it's not the view in most places.
So that's the view in Columbus,
country.
Ohio, where the police just recently stomped on a gentleman's head.
I hear you. So we've got a situation in which we need to confront violent crime in America. In cities that have abandoned traditional police activities like Baltimore and Chicago, murder rates have surged, particularly in poor neighborhoods. And so we in this department are absolutely committed to maintaining civil rights for every American. And when a police officer violates those rights and we have federal charges that we can bring, we're going to bring.
Okay, so a couple things about that. First one, I just want a quick fact check, because Jeff Sessions, who's very anti-marijuana, wants to basically outlaw it federally. I mean, it is outlawed federally, but we've kind of eased up the criminal, prosecution on a lot of offenders. But one thing that's interesting is he's trying to group car accidents and drugs now being the leading cause of car accidents versus alcohol. But he, you know, doesn't really get the fact that like marijuana is attributed to like a third of those drug influenced car accidents. He's just trying to basically be right. And obviously he's not on this. And then this past week, they're talking about the use of excessive force that one gentleman who's at Berkeley Law, essentially, Sessions gets questioned by an individual who says that, you know, his neighbors aren't necessarily afraid of the criminals in the area. They're afraid of the police. And Sessions retorts and says, maybe that's the view in Berkeley because this guy goes to Berkeley Law School. He's like, no, that's the view of in Columbus, Ohio, where he's from. And, you know, and then we have this individual, this cop, Philip Brailsford in Mesa or in Arizona, who shot and killed Daniel Shaver in I believe a hotel. Did you watch the video on that?
No.
Okay. No. It's very disturbing.
I've read about it. I listened to some of the commands parts. I stopped it well before. It's important to watch that sort of stuff and understand it, but I just couldn't do it this time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just that the kind of, it's disturbing, but also it's very hard to not, it's very hard to see this as a reason why he should be let go. I mean, the video really shows the individual crawling and then reaching into his waist while he's crawling, seemingly to pull up his shorts. And then that's when he gets shot. And that's, if I was in that police officer's shoes or SWAT team member's shoes, you could think that he had a gun on him.
Even focusing on that, you're missing like all the
right.
The important part here is that there were so many opportunities to de-escalate this, and these two officers, the guy shouting crazy instructions and the one with the gun, are on some like god complex trip here. Effectively, cops can kill you in America. They can play like the darkest game someone says with you until you fuck up and then shoot you.
And that's the
whole idea. It's just this crazy mindset now. And this is what got the guy acquitted, because he argued his training told him to shoot, and he was following his training. And there's no situation now where the officer really there was one South Carolina where the guy's running away and got shot. And thank God, Walter Scott, once. Yeah. Oh my God! I was convinced the way things are going, he'd be acquitted too.
He was sentenced to 19 years in prison, which in most cases you would probably be sentenced to life in prison.
Yeah, but look at Flando Castillo, the same stuff. And the argument here is that like civilians, all of us, we're the ones that have to be experts in encounters with police. Police can be jumpy and nervous and terrified and shoot you for no reason at all, and that's their right. But you, as the civilian facing down an officer's gun, have to be perfect in every action you make, or they're justified in killing you.
It's gotten worse and worse. And
it's going to keep getting worse. Apparently, also, I saw earlier this week that about half of the police killings in America have been misclassified as like not police killings. So it's actually been much higher than we thought before.
Oh, jeez.
Well, as it stands, of people killed by a stranger in the United States, I think like 1/3 of them are police officers.
Jeez. Anyways, let's move on to something lighter and say nature. You wanted to talk about the Flynn indictment.
So I know one thing that I'm hoping to get this year for Christmas.
What's that?
Socks, but the good kind from Bombas.
Bombas?
You ever tried them? Yeah. Socks.
I am a big sock aficionado, and Bombas is still relatively new to me. Please give me can I get some cool, crazy socks from Bombas?
You can get the most comfy socks of all time. And I take my socks very seriously. It's an important thing to me. So when I found Bombas, I was amazed at how great their socks were. They have a great selection, great colors, but really what matters is how they feel. And they are super comfortable. They're really the best socks I've ever owned, and they're very versatile too.
Well, this is actually interesting, because I've been looking for a new sock product and I've been stuck on just buying crazy socks, and I need some cool crazy socks for this Christmas. So what you got?
My favorites right now, they make a pair of socks that are comfy and warm, and just regular socks, so, you know, comfortable and all that. But they have, like, traction pads on the bottom, so you can wear them around the house.
Oh, yeah. Even better. Oh,
they
love that.
They are the best.
Love that. So are you saying I gotta buy these for my people on my list?
You do, but you have to buy them from their website and make sure to enter our code. So to buy the perfect gift for everyone on your list, go to bombas.com/45th. That's 45th. Go to bombas.com/45th today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/45th for 20% off. Well, this is old news now, but what we do know now is that Flynn lied to the... Actually, we've known that since, February? Flynn lied to the FBI in his interview just a few days after Trump took office. He told them that he did not discuss sanctions with the Russian ambassador, and that he did not discuss a UN vote that was coming up in December during the transition. So, yeah, he got a plea deal, and he accepted it. Why this matters is because Flynn he's been doomed for a long time. He did a lot of shady stuff that was black and white, in writing, literally. He was never getting out of this clean. He just couldn't. There was too much on him. If they had wanted to charge Flynn for everything they could and simply prove, I mean, he'd be facing a lot of time. And there's no reason for them not to have brought those charges except for this. He agreed to a plea where he has to talk about everything. Mueller is not doing favors for anyone. He is not out there to, you know, give people a pass on the very serious activities they were engaged in. And he's not giving deals just to see what someone might know. If he made a deal, it's because there was a proffer and he knows exactly what he's getting in exchange. So Mueller gave up. I mean, he's going to let Flynn get away with a lot of criminal conduct.
I mean,
for a reason.
I mean, he might let him get away. But if it's a small fish to catch a bigger fish, then is it really worth it?
I mean, yeah, it is. That's generally how it works. And he's not going to give anyone a total freebie. Like Papadopoulos, you're not walking away. You were low level, yes, relatively. But he's...
I mean, sitting alongside the president, you know. Do you remember seeing that photo of Papadopoulos sitting with
Sessions?
Low level's
the wrong word.
Yeah.
He's not in charge of...
He's definitely not a coffee boy.
Yeah. But he's also not the guy with a plan that
came up
with all this.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, I mean, at this point, it is a foregone conclusion that the Trump administration is basically screwed. Because there's no way that Flynn can't say a lot that can take down the whole presidency.
What do you think about this revelation from Flynn about Kushner? So the revelation was that right after he pleaded guilty, Flynn told... or at least according to reports, told Mueller that it was Kushner who directed him to contact the Russians or the Russian ambassador while they're in the transition phase.
Oh, and I think that was confirmed. Yeah, he now comes out there at least two times in that last sort of 10-day period in December where Flynn reached out to the Russian ambassador. And one of those times was because there was a UN Security Council resolution coming up condemning Israeli settlements. Mm-hmm. And Kushner didn't want that to happen. So he told all his little, you know, Trump team members, go contact these countries and tell them to either delay the vote until we can get in there and veto it or veto it themselves. Mm-hmm. And they failed. That didn't work out. But as part of that, Flynn reached out to Kislyak and asked him. And Kislyak got back the next day. I was like, nah, we can't do that, buddy. Sorry. And then separately, again, and that was the 28th and 29th, he reaches out again. And this time it's about the sanctions that Obama was imposing. And he says, hold off. Once we get in office, it'll be very different.
So, and that was what Kushner was telling Flynn?
We don't know Kushner was involved necessarily in the second one. His name, he was also on vacation at the time. So he was not down at Mar-a-Lago. At base camp, hearing what Flynn was reporting. I have zero doubts that he was, if he was not involved, it's only because he was on vacation and he knew full well what Flynn was up to. And again, what this also proves is that the administration allowed for months for all of them to go up there and talk about how Flynn didn't talk about sanctions. Flynn just said Merry Christmas. And they all knew that was a lie. They've been lying since day one.
Now, this is... While obviously this is airing on Tuesday, I want to talk about the tweet that Trump sent, not this past weekend, but the weekend before it, saying that he knew that Flynn was fired because he lied to both Vice President Mike Pence and the FBI. And then he retracted it, saying, no, actually, that was my lawyer who wrote it.
Well, he never retracted it. He never commented again. But the lawyer
It was a lawyer who came forward. That's what I was trying to iterate, was that his lawyer came forward saying, that's actually me who wrote the tweet. Which, you know, if you're an attorney, and Susan, you're an attorney, right?
Yes.
What right mind as an attorney would you ever write something like that?
Oh, it's part of our job. I regularly write incriminating tweets for my clients. Yeah.
So
it's not the best part of the job, but you got to do what you got to do.
So as with your expert legal mind, what do you make of that? What the hell do you make of that?
I mean, his attorneys have done some super boneheaded move. So like, I cannot conclusively say that this is not one of the boneheaded moves they made. But I think that the odds are against it being a tweet from his attorneys. There's just no reason to tweet that out. There's no strategic advantage. There's no purpose in doing so. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the kind of bullshit nonsense that Trump loves to tweet out. And that's like, I hate that it works that way, but you can't say for sure that Trump wasn't just making this up randomly, has no clue what he's talking about, and that he didn't realize that who the hell knows what he knew about the FBI? The fact he tweeted that he knew the FBI had been lied to doesn't mean he did.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And obviously when he knew it, and the fact that reportedly the day after Flynn was fired, he talked with Comey and said, I hope you could let this go, or you hope you can go easy on him. Again, like if Trump knew all of that, and if that's what he's admitting to, is that he knew about Flynn lying to the FBI when he fired him, does that qualify for obstruction of justice?
Yes. I mean, all of it should. But the thing is, you don't even need that, because it's abundantly clear that Trump, or at least his most senior people on his team, including his family, knew that Flynn was talking to Kislyak about sanctions and that later substantive matters. That wasn't a secret. So the whole, I mean, it wasn't like it was a surprise to him that what Flynn was saying was a lie, because his transition team, at least, was the one who told him to do it. Now, Trump will probably try and claim that it was all his people that did it. He wasn't involved. He didn't know. and whatever. It's your most senior people doing it. So as your, in terms of your administration, in terms of what you've been doing in office, this is on you.
Yeah. And then, of course, like in this past week, and we just can't obviously ignore what's going on with Mueller's investigative team, because in the past week, Peter Strzok, who was the deputy head of counterintelligence at the FBI and working on the Mueller investigation, was removed during the summer after Mueller discovered he had exchanged text messages critical of Trump with a lawyer assigned to the probe, and also with whom he was involved romantically. So an interesting bit about Strzok is that he also was responsible for editing then FBI Director James Comey's description of Hillary Clinton's handling of the classified emails in 2016, softening the language from, quote, grossly negligent to, quote, extremely careless.
Which was a totally appropriate change, because they'd already agreed they were not going to use criminal, they're not going to make it a criminal offense, so don't track the language of the criminal statute.
Yeah, but of course that brings up questions where allegedly, and I'm not entirely 100% sure of this, is that the FBI agent who Flynn lied to was Peter Strzok, which of course...
We don't know, that's not been confirmed.
That's what I'm saying. I can't say with 100% certainty that that's what's actually happened, but that's...
But here's the interesting thing. If that's true, if that is what happened, that kind of cuts against everything, all the nonsense claims coming out from the Trump administration right now. Because right after Flynn's interview, and right after news of that leaked out in about February, the FBI was leaking to the CNN and a few other outlets saying, we don't think Flynn lied. We thought he was a bit confused and forgotten some stuff, but we didn't think that he was lying, which totally cuts against the idea that, you know.
Interesting. I actually didn't see that that report.
Yeah, it's just February. Back then, like, it was like right after, like, the news broke that he had someone leaked to one of the outlets that Flynn had lied to the FBI, and the FBI immediately started hitting back and saying, no, like, there were some things he didn't remember, and we had to clarify the record, but, like, we did not think he was being intentionally deceptive or untruthful.
Interesting. Well, I mean, that, of course, in conservative circles, at least that on interviews that I've done in the last week, is that a lot of people are thinking that this is basically the nail in the coffin for the entire Mueller probe, that that's reason enough for Trump to fire Mueller, is because there
have
been...
It would be unlawful for Mueller to, like, act the way they want him to do, though, because you cannot choose...
I know, but yeah, I'm saying the fact that he had stroke on his team...
And then fired him when he found out.
Right, but of course... You know, just with Trump, what did he know and when did he know it? And it just like the same argument could be made for Mueller, just like it could be made for Trump, is what did they know and when did they know it? And how?
So what are you saying? What's the problem here with Mueller?
With Peter Stroke.
What would be the complication if he knew?
The complication is, when did he find out, obviously, about Stroke's political leanings or his anti-Trump bias?
He can't take action on that. You cannot choose a civil servant based on their political leanings. They're
private citizens. I understand that. And that's why I'm just saying that, is it possible that I don't think Mueller knew about Stroke until this summer when he removed him from his team.
Well, he was removed, it seems like, the actual problem here is that he was having an affair with one of the attorneys that worked for the FBI, and that made him, you know, that was a risk for him for security.
Yeah, he's compromised. So
he had to go, but that's the reason he absolutely had to go.
I'm just saying that from a lot of pro-Trump angles, they're saying that that is the reason to completely disband the investigation on Trump. Because
what they actually want, though,
of this one FBI agent who was compromised.
So because Mueller didn't break the law and select people based on political affiliation and beliefs, that's why the whole thing has to go?
Apparently. Huh. So, but that's
they're trying. It's crazy how much they're ramping up against Mueller.
Yeah. It's just an interesting addendum to mention about Mueller. And also because when Mueller was initially appointed as a special counsel, I believe, was it in May?
Yeah.
Oh, man, this year's been, it's just felt so long. When he was initially appointed in May, I recall Newt Gingrich specifically saying that, you know, Mueller's a man of integrity. You know, this is the best person for the job. And now you got Newt out here saying, like, that Mueller is, like, the worst person in the world, that he's completely compromised. He has no integrity. It's just a complete 180. And it's, you know, politics as usual.
Well, this goes back to the thing about Flynn. Things are going to blow up. There's not a question of if, it's when. Flynn has something ground-shaking, well, nation-changing, really. Mm-hmm. And that's going to come out. So that we're on the clock. We're waiting for that. And it's a race between whether that happens or Mueller goes. And I'm kind of surprised Mueller's still around in some respects. But, you know, firing Mueller would be a huge step and it would cause dramatic upheaval in Trump land and the rest of the world.
So what's the deal with KT McFarland? Because she was a deputy national security advisor working under Flynn in the White House. And then she was appointed to be the next U.S. ambassador to Singapore. She was appointed. She wasn't confirmed.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the deal with her? Because I know
they got some emails showing that she was talking to Flynn about his Kissinger conversations. And she knew damn well that he was talking about sanctions to him. So, and she was totally unqualified position anyway. From the beginning, we've known that Flynn would not be doing what he did on his own. That was not a rogue staffer move. That was something that was coordinated with the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, I think I recall specifically the Obama administration warning the Trump the Trump transition team to not bring Flynn in because he's just too shady. And of
the
course,
Trump campaign keeps trying. The Trump administration, an internal campaign, keeps trying to, you know, somehow smear this as like Flynn's Obama.
Yeah, he's an Obama guy. His Trump's lawyer, what's his name, Ty Cobb. Not to be confused with the famous baseball player Ty Cobb, Hall of Famer, said that in, I guess, the first statement that he was an Obama, not Obama appointee or Obama official, that Michael Flynn was an Obama official, and that was it. There's no connection to the Trump administration whatsoever. It's just so
funny. And forgetting
funny.
How Obama, like, took Trump aside and was like, by the way, that Flynn dude, totally batshit, back the hell out right now.
Yeah, so.
So Flynn, we don't know his whole story. As you said back in June, he had a story to tell, and he will tell it. We're in a race right now between whether Mueller can wrap this investigation and whatever happens there, or Trump takes action against him. I think Mueller will probably be fired first, given how things have been ramping up against him lately. And it's really serious, crazy town right now. I was watching Fox last night. I was trying to change to Netflix, and I couldn't change it fast enough. And I was like, oh my God, I can't handle this Judge Jeanine lady. And like, final note.
Oh, so what did you see?
I heard Judge Jeanine it was surreal and terrifying to hear her talk about how, like, it was basically some, like, Erdogan, Turkey, deep state-ass shit going on. They basically believe that we are living in a corrupt regime that's designed to, like, she didn't go full Pizzagate, but, like, you know, help the elites do illegal things all the time. And they're working hard to destroy the man of the people, Donald Trump, who has amazing vigor and, like, energy for a man of his age and who just wants to, you know, help the nation they love so much, and how Mueller should be arrested for all the corrupt things he's doing.
Jeez.
I know. And this is crazy. This is ramping up to a level that you can't back down from. We got Newt on one hand going full on, yeah, Mueller is whatever, corrupt, trying to, like, destroy the U.S. We have Lindsey Graham basically, you know, going full MAGA.
I'm just like, you know, as a reporter, I try not to let things get to me too much, but, like, the one thing that really bothers me throughout these last almost 12 months is just how Fox News has completely doubled down and becoming basically like state-run TV. And just whatever Trump does, you know, he can do no wrong. I actually have to, though, I won't say this is, you know, all of Fox, but there are definitely a lot of personalities on there who just, like, no matter what Trump does, you know, he's golden. He's perfect. Like, Saturday night lineup, you got Jesse Waters, followed by Jeanine Pirro, and then Greg Gutfeld. All three of them just, you know, like, it's so insufferable to the point where I have to change the channel. And, you know, I want to listen.
I'm not sure it's Trump worship, though. I think what you're saying is not necessarily.
I mean, probably the America First worship, and that's probably even a little bit more.
I think it's worse than that. I think that they're embracing the fact they have a degree of control over the president of the United States.
That's true, too. I mean, there was a report recently that came out about Jeanine Pirro going to the White House and just berating the F out of Jeff Sessions. She really wants him gone. And I think a lot of it is in part because he recused himself in the Russia probe.
I mean, Trump seeks their advice. Trump, like, live tweets their morning show basically every other day.
Yeah.
He listens to them. He takes counsel from them. They have they have real power right now over our democracy. And they're supporting their own interests, not necessarily just Trump. Trump is their instrument.
It's all about ratings. It's all about, you know, ad revenue. And it's just, a lot of it just stinks. And it's sad.
But is it about ratings? You don't really need the ratings when you have, like, control over the president. That's a much more valuable commodity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you probably make a better case that it's more about power than it is about money. And you have a direct channel to the president, and he promotes all of your stuff. Like, you know, Trump, he gave a rally, a campaign-esque rally in Pensacola on Friday, which, oddly enough,
to tell Floridians to vote for Roy Moore.
Well, it was very, very, Pensacola is very, very close to the Alabama border. So,
it was just funny to hear him go out and vote for Roy Moore. Yeah.
So, essentially, it was essentially a proxy campaign rally for Roy Moore. But, you know, in his tweet posting on it, he only cited Fox News, watching on Fox News, even though it was showing on every other cable network. Just because that's the it's like a quid pro quo type of deal. It's just, it's you know, it just stinks. And I am sad that our democracy at least has kind of boiled down to this type of, you know, not only the level of pettiness that we get from Trump, but just like this crony capitalism. That's the one thing I hate more than anything.
Yeah. The democracy isn't just like being embarrassed here. It's dire. Like, I think that things go seriously bad sooner than we expect here, and it's scary where we are right now. I don't even know how to deal with it day to day, basically, just to ignore the fact that we have a possibility of our democracy crumbling around us, and work to try and, you know, counteract that. But with the Fox, sometimes I wonder if democracy is compatible with Fox News. I mean, you have someone brainwashing a significant chunk of the population with this crazy stuff about, like, you know, birtherism during Obama's days, like telling people that he was going to, like, you know, destroy the Constitution, take all our guns. And when people start believing that, I mean, of course they're going to start embracing all kinds of, like, how do you go back from that? Yeah. Once they're not, I'm not saying you should force them not to do it because it is First Amendment and all that stuff, but what they're doing undermines our ability to have a functioning democracy. And Trump is, this is going to sound terrible, but thank God he's old. Like, he can't survive much more than, like, what, the worst case scenario, 20 years.
Oh, well, we'll see if he abolishes the Constitution and he's president for another 20 years. So,
yeah, like, so if he was like 50, 40,
you'd be way scared.
I'd be more scared than I am already.
Well, let's move on to some less scary stuff. Paul Manafort.
Well, I would do Manafort because it's also kind of hilarious. But I think that warrants at least a large segment of itself. So next week we'll get in some details there about what's happening. But just because it's too great not to comment on now, the current drama in Manafort land is that, well, first of all, Gates, the other person indicted with him, his business partner, has said that he has been told by Mueller's team that they are pondering new charges. So a superseding indictment here, which means they would charge him with more stuff than on top of what he's already charged with, which would be fun. But also Manafort, he's currently on bail and house arrest, and Mueller's team brought a motion to, like, revoke that because he has violated conditions of his release by working on an op-ed in Ukraine to sort of justify all of his shady activities there. And then Manafort claimed, oh, no, I didn't do that. That's not what I was doing. So Mueller files a Word copy of the document with, like, track changes on to see Manafort in his home under house arrest working on an op-ed about his activities in Ukraine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that should be fun coming days. But we'll have to get more into that later. As well as the fact that we now know that on, well, what also happened earlier this week is that Representative Cummings' office announced that they had a whistleblower come forward and say that on Inauguration Day, during the inauguration, Michael Flynn texted his business partner and said, we're good to go on the Saudi-Russia power plant, you know, rechange the world in of power plan we got going on. Tell our business partners to get ready.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So and there's a lot going on there with ACU and, like, Iron Bridge and that whole, you know, making profit off of restructuring global alignments thing that we can't get into right now. But I think that's also going to be a huge part of the coming days and also a reason why Flynn's plea deal is so significant. The stuff he was engaged in was very large. And, I mean, working on a private business deal in office, that's a little bit of a no-no. Mm-hmm. So if Mueller's willing to overlook that, there's got to be something, again, nation and history changing coming down the pipeline.
Well, I look forward to all the news breaks and the long days of being at the office trying to report on all this.
How is it as a reporter now? Like, how do you even do your job? Is it like...
I'm completely drained by the end of the week, to be honest with you. And, like, you know, I don't... You know, during the day, there's so much going on that I don't have to watch cable news at night. I already know what's going on. So I guess in that case, I use the nighttime to just completely unplug. And if anything, if there's a breaking story, I'll read about it. But, like, I'll save it for the next day to write about.
Yeah. So as a reporter, how do you feel about the sort of the more – it's always happened, obviously. But yeah. The fake news rhetoric is really kind of pushing up lately. Probably like 3 tweets a day instead of just 1 tweet a day.
Yeah. You know, Trump in a lot of cases, he doesn't have it's the boy who cried wolf. It's the boy who cried fake news. He cries fake news so many times that any time – that a reporter or an organization gets it wrong, you'd be like, you see, I was right this whole time. But a lot of the reporting that obviously is done is sound, and, you know, sources that a lot of the reporters have within the White House or within the administration are legitimate, and a lot of scoops that they're getting are legitimate. But then you have a day like Friday with the Donald Trump Jr. story, and you had what else was it? Oh, man, there were like 3 different things. The Dave Weigel tweet, the Pensacola, Florida rally, the Beverly Young Nelson story about the Roy Moore thing, like all
which was actual fake news.
Yeah, so there is exactly, and it's fake news on both sides of the aisle.
Well, I mean, okay, so what happened with Dave Weagle is he tweeted out the photo. I don't even know what happened there, really, but the photo was not accurate.
Right. He basically showed a photo of an empty, like a pretty, like, empty rally.
But he deleted it within 20 minutes. Yeah. Whatever. Like, it's not that big a deal.
And then Trump just, like, railed against him on Saturday saying he should be fired and, you know, he should apologize and he should be fired. You know, Weigel apologized. He retracted it. He's like, I got it wrong. Like, I'm sorry. And then Trump tweeted again. He's like, he should be fired. And then you have, and then Fox News reported at least twice on Sunday that he was fired or he left his job, which is not the case at all.
I mean, this is a severe threat to the First Amendment and democracy when the President of the United States calling on reporters to be fired. That's right. Inexcusable. And no one's really alarmed by it now because we've been boiled so slowly with all the crazy stuff with his relationship with the press that, you know, I mean, it's not surprising, but it's still a big deal.
Right. And then you had like Sarah Huckabee Sanders in the last like month or so that I can't recall what exact story was, but she was calling on someone to be fired. For criticism of the president. And it was just like, really? Like, you're getting bent out of shape for that? So, yeah, like, there is a war on the First Amendment in terms of freedom of press, but...
And it's not about the truth. They don't care. Like, they're probably... They love it when there's news that's not accurate. It helps them.
I think they also double down on that rhetoric because they know, you know, the press is going to screw up no matter, you know, at some point down the line. It's like a, you know, it's like a mass shooting or like a terrorist attack. Like, you're never going to stop all of them. You can stop like the frequency or you can stop the impact of, or like the overall like casualty rate. But like, you know, some reporter is going to get it wrong at some point in time. And, you know,
they're not trying to make the press more accurate. That's not their goal.
But it sounds like they're trying to force the hand of these news organizations to then double down in their criticism of the president so then they could, you know, go and turn to their base and see, you see, guys, they're against us. They've always been against us. And yeah, that's how they double down on their base.
Yeah. They're trying to make sure the Americans don't, or at least enough Americans, don't believe the news, don't believe the media.
Right.
Basically,
but they would believe the
destroy
president
our ability
instead.
No, not even believe the president. It's just to separate, they're trying to destroy our ability to know the truth, to separate truth from falsehood, and to just give up on.
Right, but
being
what's the reason for doing that? The reason for doing that is to get them to trust the president and that Trump would be the truth teller, or he has more, I guess he tells the truth more than the news organization. So why should you go to them for news when you can trust him, therefore, you know, upping his loyalty and support?
Yeah, and also once Mueller's investigation breaks, I'm not going to believe it.
Right, and then increasing his power, that kind of stuff. Like, it's very... authoritarian-esque.
You can drop the esque, really. but let's go to the other story on CNN. So what happened? I forget what day now.
It was Friday. It was Friday that happened.
Yeah. This past week or decade, whatever it was, the CNN had they reported on some... So Don Jr. testified before Congress. He was
in a closed hearing.
Upset about how long it lasted. Although it was, I think, several hours short of like the full Hillary interview. What she went through when she was doing her, you know, Benghazi investigation.
Right, in 2015, yeah.
So it seems like that was where this information came from, but at some point, CNN got at least two sources to confirm for them that a certain email had been written on September 4th, pointing to certain hacked and leaked emails. Now, if it was September 4th and this happened, that would be a bigger deal because it would be before they were publicly released and before everyone knew about, for instance, the hack of Colin Powell's emails. In fact, it looks like the email was actually written on the 14th, so the day they did come out, the day they were posted publicly. So that would not necessarily indicate any kind of insider knowledge or any kind of like pre-access to the hacked emails. But the way the story has played out makes me really think that there is a troubling backstory here. CNN did not take action against the reporter. It said he did follow all their procedures. They did get multiple sources confirming it. And I think there's a real chance here that this was a setup, which is, we know that the Trump administration's been trying to do for a while now.
Yeah. And they just finally got the media.
Yeah. And I think that they are on a campaign to, they're trying to create false news.
The correct term is fake news, Susan. Get it right.
Yeah. They are trying to make sure the media runs stories that are based on their false information as opposed to reality, so they can undermine the ability of the press to actually convey the truth to all of us. That's not confirmed in any way, shape, or form right now. But just looking how CNN handled the situation, it does seem as if that they're not blaming their reporter for what happened. And obviously, they have to take precautions. The Trump administration is going to lie to them on background, right, on like their sources they think they can trust. They probably can't. And probably the sources themselves are getting fed bad info.
And that's a problem. I mean, like, those are like planted stories.
Or did someone leak these emails with the date altered to say the 4th instead of the 14th, knowing those people would then leak to the press?
Yeah, no, I know. And, you know, like that, obviously you could pin part of the blame on the media for running with that story and not doing their due diligence and getting, you know, fleshing it out further.
But again, it seems like they did. That's, I mean, right, no, obviously,
I know, but
now,
I'm just saying, yeah, like, you know, if you're a reporter and you get the story wrong, which in this case they did, you know, where do you turn to next? I mean, do you say that this was reporting that we did that we thought we didn't, you know, to our standard? Or do you take it down, which I think they were a little bit slow to do that.
And if a source straight up lied to them, they need to burn the source.
No, I don't exactly think that's what happened here. You got to burn the source.
I bet the sources got fed bad, like, disinfo, yeah, is more likely what happened. So the source themselves did not realize that they were giving, for example, doctored emails.
Yeah. I mean, I probably would, you know, wager that it was a setup, if anything.
Yeah. So I think that's, I mean, the goal, and also combine that with Trump's constant tweets asking for reporters to be fired. He's trying to make it so reporters are too afraid to report the Russia investigation. Like, is it worth my job to do the story?
Yeah. You know, we've, at least at the Examiner, the Washington Examiner, we've gotten like a number of leads from people just on Roy Moore, and we've broken a few stories on him. One of the stories that my colleagues reported on, which is great, like they spent like a few days this past week reporting on it, fleshing it out, was that Roy Moore was actually, he actually started dating his current wife, Kayla, while she was still married, but she was separated. So like, it's the type of stuff that, like, you know, a man of God who follows the Ten Commandments, you know, and follows the Bible down to a T, you know, presumably, goes after women while they're still married. A lot of people thought we were being funded by George Soros when we broke that story, because it was just so funny because it completely
undermined. Yeah, the Examiner definitely gets that sweet, sweet Soros money.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so it was just one of those things where, like, you know, once you, like, break a story like that, then you're going to start getting a lot of leads from people who, like, yeah, I was molested by Roy Moore when I was a teenager, but, like, you know, a lot of the story just doesn't check out. So, like, as a reporter, you just have to make sure you do your due diligence every single lead you get to make sure it checks out. Because, you know, if everything checks out, you could still, I mean, like, you could still get burned like a lot of these CNN reporters probably did.
Mm-hmm. Although it's much harder to doctor a story like that than it is to doctor a few emails.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's true. I mean, luckily, the Washington Post, who initially reported on the Roy Moore allegations with Lee Korfman, you know, Project Veritas, the James O'Keefe's organization, you know, they're known for their gotcha style journalism when they set up secret cameras. I mean, all they really did was prove how good the Washington Post reporting is, because they tried to basically plant a Moore accuser there. And they,
so I'd like to think Washington Post is that good, but I'm not sure this proved it, because it was a pretty pathetic attempt from them.
I know, but like, just, that's what I'm saying is, like, yeah, it at least meets a lot of the journalistic standards that they should meet. Whether they're the best, I can't, you know, say that.
Yes, they'll need a better group than O'Keefe's group to show how good they really are.
So, oh, man.
Well, thank you for joining us this week for the 45th. And we'll be back next week to see where Mueller is now.
And where Trump is now, obviously.
Yeah,
and
probably
where
the White House
is, where, or Doug Jones.
Oh, yes, that we'll know for sure. Well, actually, where is Roy Moore right now? No one's, like, seen him in days.
As of Sunday, he's keeping a low profile, which is something Doug Jones should have done. He should have just, as soon as these allegations came out, he should have just not said a word.
No, he can't just hope to coast in. No, I don't.
He should have.
Well, we'll see today, but hopefully we're both wrong and Alabama will come to its senses last minute.
I'm not wrong. I'm definitely right about this.
Yeah. We'll confirm next week.
All right. See you then. See you guys. Have a good one. Good talking to you, Susan.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345. And you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.